accession number 18463, reel 17.
Dunbar at reel 17.
Yeah. We then got called down onto the road and we formed up in the road down there. It was a rather funny thing down there because the MMGs and the mortars carriers were down there. And they'd collected loads of American weapons, carbines and M1s and grease guns and all the rest of it. And they were burning them. They got little fires going and they put the butts in a circle round like a cartwheel. And they were burning them all there. And we said, what the hell are you doing that for? Because, you know, these are always useful things to have around times. And they said that they were so ashamed of the way the 2nd Division had reacted to their fight down through the path. Well, they hadn't fought down the path. They just tried to drive through it instead of fighting their way through. They didn't want any more American weapons. They were burning them. I've got to be honest. I think myself, it was the platoon sergeants and platoon commanders who were saying, look, we've got too much of this, we've got to get rid of it, and this is a good way of getting rid of it. But that was the story that they told us at the time. And we were going out. We thought we were going out on the carriers, actually, but we were sent just a little bit up where there was a little gully, and the American 4-2s, a platoon American 4-2 mortars was there, and we loaded onto their lorries. And it was such a tight fit. I can't get on. I couldn't get on at Coonery. And I can't get on at to Yopery. And I thought, well, there's only one place. They were towing a trailer. So I thought, if I stand on the towing bar and sort of hang on fairly tight, I'll be okay. And with a bit of luck, I could get on the tarpaulin, you know, and probably stretch it a bit. Anyway, American driver came round. Two of them came round. And they said, what are you doing? I said, well, I can't get on. And they said, well, no, you can't. But we'll throw you off as we go over the rough ground. You'll never survive on there. Come round and get in the cab. There's room for three in the front of the cab of an American lorry. Open cab, windscreen, and just little low side doors. So I went round the front, and for the first time ever, I'm in the cab of an American lorry and got chatting to them. But they were not terribly chatty chaps, to be quite honest. And we moved off. Our cars must have gone first because they're not on that little hill anymore. And we were expecting to fight our way back 8 miles, and we thought it might be cut. But it looked okay because the Argyles had gone on ahead. Moved off, got down to the MSR, everything quiet, no MPs, no nothing. And the cavalry was supposed to have been covering our withdrawal, but apparently there'd been a mix-up. That wasn't how we thought of it at the time, but there'd been some sort of mix-up, and they'd gone off early, so we're now at the rear of the column again, and headed off now towards Pyongyang. And people are saying that this is a general withdrawal. We're going back to South Korea. I can't believe it. Possible, isn't it? We wouldn't go back to South Korea. And we started then to, first of all, we were passing through the 29 Brigade, their forward post. First of all, we saw a Centurion tank on the side of the road, which had obviously broken down, and the crew were out with the engine covers off trying to repair it and what have you. And we passed quickly by that. Then we began to see 29. We hadn't seen them before, you'd appreciate. They've only just arrived. And they had a sort of a camouflage suit on, trousers and loose jacket, and they were wearing steel helmets. We didn't wear steel. We'd given up steel helmets back on the Nacton, and they were pretty smart, I must say. And I can't. It might have been later, but about this time, we passed through. No, it was this time. I remember now. We started to pass through 29 Brigade HQ. A great mass of tents it was. I'd never seen so many tents, because Air Brigade HQ was a signal wagon, the brigade commander's wagon, 2 or 3 1,500 weights and a few tents, things like that. But their brigade, it was enormous. There were 4-2 mortars lined up, and they were of a type I'd seen pictures of in the Second World War. They had a, they had sort of extensions on the barrels and a platform where they had to stand up on and put the bombs down. And then I've talked to a 29 Brigade chap, and he said they never used them, so they probably dumped them there. Passing through Centurion tanks on guard each side of the road. And as we got into the brigade headquarters, we wondered what was going to happen. And we stopped actually by their brigade headquarters. And a few people looked out and we gave them a bit of a wave. And suddenly they realised who we were, 27 Brigade, the people who should have gone home, of course, when they arrived. And they poured out. I'd never seen anything like it. It was amazing. I'd never seen quartermasters with two or three rows of medal ribbons up, running out and throwing packets of sweets and tea and sugar at squaddies in the back. So we had a fantastic reception. I wasn't getting any because I'm in the front with the Yanks. Anyway, suddenly a queue quartermaster came up and said, "Hey, come on here, lad," and gave me a great big handful of sweets, rolls of sweets, sort of like polo roll type of things with sweets inside. And I didn't know what to say to the Yanks. I said, "Well, it's our 29 Brigade. They're out from England. They're pleased to see us." And I could see they couldn't quite fathom what all this fuss was all about. Shortly after that, we began to move on, and the lads in the back have got their tea and their sugar, and I've got my little handful of sweets, which I give out to the Americans, and we share them out there, and they've got loads of stuff like this, so they were not all that sort of happy with it, I suppose. And we went on. Pyongyang's a great pall of smoke. I've never seen anything like it in all my life. They're burning everything. They say it's all stores. I reckon they were doing buildings as well. But they're burning everything there is there to burn. So we could have done with some of this, you know, the winter clothing and stuff like that, but we never got a chance. We went straight on down to the river, and there's a pontoon bridge down there. A solid column of vehicles going over, American, some 29 Brigade, their Bofors guns, anti-aircraft guns, were going back across. And we got onto the bridge, and it began to sag a little bit. And I did wonder, because I can't swim. And thought, well, it's not much point in undoing my equipment, because I'll only go to the bottom anyway and get it over quick. And the old pontoon bridge, because it was a solid column of traffic there, it wasn't really intended it should ever be like that, tanks and guns and our vehicles loaded with all us, started to go across. And looking across the other side, I could see the 29 Brigade tanks, Churchill tanks these were, lined up along the side there, and I thought, that's it, we're going to go up on the bank there, we're going to dig in, and you know, this is the end of the retreat, thank goodness. But we didn't, we went on, and we didn't stop till nightfall, and we went down a little side road. I think we must have been clear of Pyongyang by now, I can't be sure. And we stopped in a little gully, beautiful little gully it was, with a little stream in the bottom. We stopped there for the night, sentries of course as usual, but we didn't dig in or anything. And the following morning when we got up, it was great. We had a nice, you know, water, running water, we got a little fire going, and we had a good wash and shave, because you know, the policy in the brigade was always wash and shave every morning, which somewhat surprised the Americans, who their view of a combat soldier is that he'll have 5 or 6 days growth of beard and be dirty, but we never had that. And cleaned ourselves up, and company commander came along and said to Albert, tell your lads to go off down the gully a little bit and test fire the weapons, which we occasionally did. We'd always occasionally doing this. And we went off down the gully and fired a few rounds into the bank. And that apparently frightened the American drivers who were up on the top there waiting for us. But the reason being apparently was that the trucking companies, when they finished a job, they apparently pop off back to wherever they come from, and another one had turned up and was waiting for us up the top. This time there were more vehicles, and we got the order to move about dusk, I guess, before we moved. And there was plenty of transport this time. We didn't know, but they would come from Corps, although we weren't never aware of these things. And we drove off down this little road, and I have a picture of a shop full of cream cakes. It must have been complete imagination. It looked like a beautiful baker's shop in England full of cream cakes. And I saw this thing go by. I haven't got a clue what it was. It was a shop, but it certainly wasn't cream cakes in it. And we went off then, and I think we probably drove most of the night. I'm getting my days confused here, as you always do in these cases. We drove across a great morning came, and we were driving across a great plain, and you couldn't help thinking to yourself, by golly, this is pretty good tank country, which is pretty unusual in Korea. Great high peaks on one side or the other, but this great flat plain of paddy fields. Went on down, and we came to a junction on the road, and there was a dingo scout car pushed off the side. I presume it must have been on a brigade. Probably abandoned, but it broken down, and we were destroying old vehicles that broke down, probably pushed it off the road. I'd never seen a dingo before, except in my dinghy joys at home when I was a little lad. And we went off down, we were at Corps HQ, and our battalion, 1MX, is guarding Corps HQ, which should theoretically be a fairly long way behind the line. And they've got Americans guarding them with heavy machine guns, who are just packing up, and we're digging in. And we dug in on the southern side of Corps, which was a great mass of tents, and I didn't know it at the time, but they had a little landing strip there as well. And we dug in facing south. We had some good positions, quite, you know, with good fields of fire and what have you. And did our usual, stood the LNGs for two, and the rest of the people in their trenches, but allowed to, you know, brew up and eat, do what they liked. There were no set times for meals. You did it when you were hungry, you ate, and once you'd ate your rations, that was an end to it. You didn't have any more till the following day. And one of the LMG posts called me forward and said, there's somebody out there. And there was this little, it wasn't so much a house, but a little hut over near the road, and somebody was moving around by it. And I got my glasses on it. I said, it's probably with a bit of profanity, that's one of the lads who I knew rather well, who was an absolutely excellent soldier when any action was going on. But the moment it stopped, he was an absolute pain in the bottom. That's about the best, kindest thing I can say about him. Always off on his own and doing silly things. And he had a sort of little clientele who were rather sort of, you know, fond of him and were rather pleased to see the way he went on. Anyway, I shouted to him to come back, and he strolled over, and his pals were all laughing away there, and sat in his trench. I didn't say anything. I went up to him, and I put the barrel of my Stenner, which I'd just cocked, against the side of his head, and I said to him, if you ever do that again, I'll shoot you. And I never had any more trouble with him ever again after that. Never any trouble. I guess he believed me, and I'm not entirely sure whether I would have done or not, to be quite honest. But I wasn't too pleased with it at that moment. But apparently he'd been over there and found this place was full of carcasses of meat, fresh carcasses of meat, presumably belonged to Corps. But they'd abandoned them. And, of course, if he'd asked and gone out and done a little patrol out there, which had been very reasonable so to do, and not popped off on his own, we probably would have had some fresh meat, but we couldn't. I couldn't allow him to go and carve this up now. And that we spent a quiet night, no trouble at all, absolutely quiet. And the following... that night, the CO ordered Lights Out to be played on the bugle, and that put the fear of God into Corps, because every bugle was Chinese, and they were asked never to do that again, because it had frightened all the Corps officers and the Corps commander, and they weren't ever to sound a bugle again. And in fact, funnily enough, we never guarded Corps ever again. They were not too pleased with us, I guess. Anyway, the following morning, word came that we were going to move, but the order for Corps to move was when the Corps Commander's Auster took off, and he wouldn't allow any tent struck until this little aircraft took off and flew down to wherever he was going to go. It was Sibiu, although we didn't know at that time. And I guess probably about 2 o'clock, something like, might have been earlier, might have been midday, the plane took off and they started to strike the tents. And there was a line of lorries on the road. And we hadn't got a clue what they were. We presumed they were taking the Corps stuff away. But we were marched out, put on these lorries, and to our relief, plenty of room, and we were driven south to another position where we dug in on the side of the road. And the Argars took over the protection of Corps. As I say, we never did it again after that. And there was lots of rocks marching down. They didn't seem to have hardly any transport at all, and they were literally marching to the south. And we still can't believe this. Here we are. We're going south. We're going down to South Korea. It's unbelievable. Cannot believe that the 8th Army is withdrawing into South Korea without fighting or stopping or doing something to blunt the Chinese offensive with all their tanks and guns and aeroplanes and God knows what else. That was a quiet night. We were just off the road. Nothing much happened. We dug in. Just a normal sort of night. The following day, we moved south to a place called Sibiu. That's where Corps was then, with the Argyles guarding them. And we were set off. We may have spent the night in Sibiu. I can't be sure now without looking at the diary. But we then moved off down the MSR and then went south down the MSR, where we dug in on the on a very, very deep defile between very high hills. And the hills were burning, fires were burning up on the hills. And we had a feeling, maybe quite wrongly, it might have been a normal thing at this time of year in Korea, but we had a feeling that they'd been lit to indicate where we were. And even now, I just have this faint feeling that there were people up there watching us, and they'd lit these fires to indicate where the various positions were. And in fact, the one on the right-hand side of the road, which would be like the western side of the road, that actually during the night burnt right over the 4 platoon position, and they had to withdraw until it burnt over them, and then they moved back in position again. The mortars were down, 4-2 mortars, this is, the American 4-2 mortars, were down in the little, in the edge of the road, just literally forward of us. And they were dug in there. And eventually they put a little pimple ahead of us. They put a team of guys up there with a 50 caliber. And all was pretty quiet through the night. Nothing much happened. The only exciting thing was that we apparently had liberated loads of tins of tin pumpkin. And it's best described as pink cotton wool. I can't describe it as anything. It's the most dreadful thing in the world I've ever tried. I mean, I tried to eat a bit of it, and we were always hungry. But it was absolutely dreadful, and nobody wanted it. And we spent the night there. The next following morning, D Company went through us. And they went off down on a company patrol down the road. And when they came back, they said that they'd found an American officer up in the hills, their decomposed body of an American officer. He was only just dressed in his uniform, and they knew he was an officer because he had the outline of an oak leaf on his shoulder, so he was either a major or a colonel, one or t'other. And they buried him in a shallow grave and left him. Had no identification on him at all, came back. And sometime after this, we were now attached to the American Airborne. We were pretty good lads. And they came marching up. They were doing a forced march up through us, going up north, up to the road junction, I guess, up to Corps. And they had funny peaked hats on. They weren't wearing helmets, which is fairly unusual for Americans. And they were really sweating it out there, going through us at a fair old pace. And I must admit, we looked at them and we thought, well, these are the sort of chaps we can operate with. They were working the same way as we do. And that was a little bit unusual, I must admit, that particular time in the American Army. They were not at their best. And they went on through us. And the following morning, we got the order to move. The whole Corps and Corps HQ and a brigade are going back to south of the 38th parallel. And again, we're astounded. We can't believe it. It just seems ridiculous. We haven't seen anybody or met anybody. Been no fighting whatsoever. And nobody wants to fight. It just seems ridiculous to run and not put up some sort of fight. We got American lorries turned up for us, I guess from Cora. You know, one of the rare occasions where we had enough room in the lorries. And we came down off the hills. Before you come down, of course, as section commanders and platoon commanders and what have you, you have to go around all the pits to make sure nothing's been left. Well, we buried the wretched pumpkin pink cotton wool. In fact, we've been given some more tins and we buried them as well in the bottom of the trenches. But you go around because people leave things like pick handles and shovels and things like that. But in particular bayonets, the little spike bayonet that we had was very useful for a tent peg. And of course, they'd strike their... We didn't have tents with us at that time, but I mean, they'd strike their night shelter and leave the wretched bayonets in the ground. So you usually have a handful of bayonets. In fact, I only found one this day. Went down the road and we loaded up on the vehicles. Prior to this, incidentally, I must say, it just had a little bit there. Company commander came along just about an hour before we moved, and he came down to our post, and he was looking down at the American post down the other end there. The mortars had been firing, incidentally, firing up into the hills there, but you don't remember these things because they're normal and you don't remember artillery firing. And he said to me, you see that post down there? I said, yeah. And he said, well, yes, sir, I'm sure. I didn't say yeah. And he said, well, the platoon commander, company commander of the mortars asked me to put a section on there last night, and I was thinking of yours. He said, and I thought, no, they've got plenty of men. Let them do it. And he said, looking at it now, I've got a feeling perhaps I made a mistake. Perhaps we should have put a section on there. So I was quite relieved, really. I didn't really want to be down there away from the platoon. But anyway, we're back down on the road now, loaded up on the trucks. Went up to the main MSR, turned left, and started to go off. I think we were probably the rear of the column. I think the Argylls had gone first with Corps, and then the Aussies went, and then we followed on behind at the rear of the column. Went along very mountainous country, very hills and narrow roads, and you could have been caught anywhere along there. Wonderful place for an ambush. There'd already been a number of ambushes, incidentally, on the MSR behind us, and all sorts of stories were coming about there with the Americans being ambushed, and the adjutant went back and cleared the road because there was nobody there and brought the convoy on and what have you. Some wonderful stories coming on. Anyway, we go on, and we realised then that we came to a T-junction. And there were a load of ROCs, police there, military police. And they really had a look on their face that they wanted us to get through a bit quick so they could probably get in their jeeps and follow on behind. Came down then to a place where, when we were going north, we'd seen this, we'd passed this tank, T-34, on the side of the road. And he's still there now, stuck on the side of the road. So we knew we were coming down and we were above the 38th parallel, but we were getting a bit closer to it. And we turn off there and start heading south toward the 38th. Lots of civilians now, very, very cold. Lots of civilians. There hadn't been, I don't recall any on the alternative route that 9 Corps came down, but we're now over in the 1st Corps area. Quite often you call it I Corps because of one and an I, you know, but the 1st Corps area. And we're heading south, lots of civilians, many, many of them all looking pretty sad. And you couldn't help thinking that there might be a few unpleasant North Koreans in amongst them. And that when they got to the ROC police posts, they'd be a bit ruthless with the any they thought that weren't suitable for crossing. And we went on, must have crossed the 38th, I guess, sometime there. But all life's beginning to sort of become a blur now. And eventually we turned off, and the first, I mean, I suppose we were sleeping and things like that, and we turned off down a narrow track and into an area where there were some trees and just paddy fields and little ridges and things like that. And we were dumped off in the ground and told to go off into platoon areas, dig one LMG post up on various little hillocks there. And we'd man the LMG post and have the NCO prowler guard all night. And we got into a little ditch. Looked as if it had once been a little stream or something like that. And we had a fairly cold night because we hadn't got our main bedding rolls. We just got that we carried with us. And pretty cold night. And the next morning, we were sent out on a patrol. This would be about, I guess, 12th of December, something like that. And we went out on a fairly long foot patrol, the platoon, up through past the Australians, who, funny enough, lucky enough, had got a Disson hut. And we thought they were in glory. They were with a Nissen hut, old Nissen hut there. And we went off, and when we got to the extremes of our patrol, there was a single house, and I had a quick look round it, and it had all the normal things, the bowler which they, and the great club which they growing their grain with for bread or what have you, or whatever it is they make with it, and the rope straw making machine, and all the normal things there, but absolutely empty. And looking out over the valley, it's a funny place for a house. I guess he must have owned this, the fields there, maybe had cattle perhaps or something like that, but it was dead, nothing about as far as the eye could see. And we had to go back the same way as we come, which of course isn't the normal thing for a patrol. We usually come around in a circle. Got back, and we're now on central cooking, and we had our meal, went back to our little gully, and had another quiet night in the gully without any trouble. Next morning, the company commander came over and said he was lending us the three tonner and the 1500 weight, and there was a camp, army, an old dilapidated army camp not far away, and if we went over, we'd probably stay here for Christmas now, if we could find whatever building materials there were, bring them back and build something up, some sort of shelter around so that we could have a bit of shelter. And we went off to this army camp, absolutely dilapidated, all the roofs gone and everything. But funny enough, it would have been a best place for us because it had concrete stands and we'd have been reasonably dry and off the ground. And I had a look around, I couldn't find anything, not of any use whatsoever for building stuff. But of course, my lads were like ferrets, they were everywhere. And young Nicky came up to me and said, "We're ready to go, ready to go." And I said, "Well, hold on, I haven't got anything yet." He said, "Well, wait a minute, we're ready to go, we're ready to go." I went back to the three-tonner, and I couldn't believe it. They got loads of stuff on there. And the other platoon had got loads of corrugated iron, and they were well pleased. They wanted to go as well. And we went off, and I'll be honest, I thought we'd had a bit of a failure. But cut a very long story short, when we got back, they started to build a hut. They'd found a wooden hut somewhere, complete, with a pitch roof and everything. And I'll be honest, they'd done a marvellous job, and they totally ignored anything I said. You know, they were having the time of their life doing their own thing. And they built this house, big enough hut, I guess it was, builder's hut or something like that. It looks like a builder's hut. Even got this pitch roof. I mean, I wanted to put the roof on flat, but they said, no, pitch roof and everything, door, window, got a great oil drum, fire, chimney. And by the end of the day, they'd gone off and found some straw mats from some houses just over the ridge there, which actually were occupied, so I don't know quite how they got them, but anyway, they got them out of an empty house, I presume. And we had this fantastic house. I'd never seen anything like it. We could just lay in there like sardines, all close together, feet to head, feet to head, feet to head, with this great fire going. And it was so hot, you could take all your clothes off, your outer clothes off, and we were sleeping in our long johns. It was absolutely fabulous. I have no idea how they managed to do it. It was the best one. We called it...